Thank you. Our next question is from Brian MacArthur with UBS Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I was wondering if you could expand a little bit more. You talked about the delays in the U.S. For permitting ISL operations, but I also see in your longer-term forecast has been cut fairly dramatically out in 2014-ish. Is that all just permitting delays in the ramp-up, or is there something else going on there now?
Hi, Brian. It really is related to permitting delays. I think we've said it before on some of our conference calls. It's complicated, I would say, in the U.S. We find it, and I know our competitors and the juniors are finding it. The plethora of regulatory agencies, I think of the Wyoming DEQ, the BLM, and the NRC, and the ERA, a lot of different agencies that are getting involved and which is delaying the project. So that's why we pushed back a bit. We just see that it's going to take us a little longer to get the permitting in place before we can bring these projects into production.
And maybe just on Inkai, same question. You sort of talked about it. Originally, I guess it was going to be 3.1 million pounds off the 5.2 expansion. Now you've got, you know, a production of 2.9 and, I guess, profits of 3.0. I guess, was that... I guess that contractor expansion changed in this recent MOU. Is that effectively what happened?
So what it was for that last 500 ton to move from 1,500 to 2,000 ton, we made a deal with the partners, which is normal in the business, I think. We changed the equity to a 50-50 split and then the marketing to 40-60 in favor of Kazatomprom. And that is, as I say, a normal give and take in our business. We're happy to have that deal. It needs a few more government approvals before it's finalized, but we think it's a good deal for both sides.
And at one time you were talking about going from 5.2 to 10.4, and that was going to be a 50-50 split as well. Is that still there, or is that just going to likely be renegotiated in the future?
Yeah, no, that's, Brian, that's the same deal that's in place. That's been in place from the start, that the first 2,000 ton was 60-40 or some combination. As I say, we made a little bit of an adjustment on the last 500 ton. But for anything going forward, it was a 50-50 split.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. The next question is from Greg Barnes with TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Tim, in the Canadian operations, you talk about costs going up because of standby charges related to the McClean Lake mill. And I assume that's related to processing the Cigar Lake materials through McClean Lake, but you're paying standby charges already. Is that correct?
So, Greg, we had a deal in place with the McClean Lake partners, Areva and partners, even before to mill half of the ore, before this latest deal we made to mill half the ore, to have their mill ready on standby to accept Cigar Lake ore. And so In the counterparty for that was that we would pay some portion of the standby costs. So those are the standby costs we're seeing now. You know, their mill is down. They took it down in, I believe, the summer of 2010 when they ran short on some of their own ore. And so they're keeping the mill ready for us for Cigar Lake ore, which is extremely important for us, especially now that we're going to take all of the ore there. And so those are the fees we're paying to Areva and the McClean partners to have that mill ready to go.
So how substantial are the fees, Tim?
I think in the we're just looking at each other. We believe it's in the range of $20 million per year that are and that's shared among the partners.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Once again, if you have a question, please press star one at this time. The next question is from Edward Sterk with BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. I noticed that you made a comment on page 16 of the MD&A, basically saying that you've increased one of your credit facilities from $500 million to $1.25 billion and extended its lifespan from November 2012 through to November 2016. As yet, that facility remains completely undrawn, according to what you've written in the report here. I was just wondering if you could comment on why the increase there, you know, what that facility might be allocated for, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, thanks, Edward. I'm going to ask Grant Isaac to answer that, as he was the architect of the change here. So, Grant?
Yeah, happy to do that. You'll recall that we had two credit facilities in the past. We had a $500 million credit facility, and then we had a $100 million credit facility. Both were set to expire in 2012, and the $100 million credit facility was actually expiring in early 2012, in February. So that really became the timing we were working towards, because we had an interest in not having two facilities, but having one broader syndicated facility. So with that February timing in mind, we then looked at what was going on in the capital markets and really wanted to take advantage of some favorable macroeconomic conditions. So we moved ahead with the renewal of it. We both amended and extended the line of credit, and really, as I say, it was to take advantage of some favorable conditions. And you've seen a number of players in the resource sector do the same. So timing driven by the expiry of the first facility, and we're quite happy to have that done.
And is there any reason for the fairly significant uplift in terms of the total facility that's available?
Well, I suppose when you think about these facilities, you always want to have a good offense and a good defense. You want to come up with a number that allows you to take advantage of opportunities that might be presenting themselves in the market right now, given the conditions in our sector. And also, you want to be able to plan for price uncertainty. You want to be able to plan for different conditions that might adversely affect your plan. So you factor all of that in, and a line of credit of that size is both a good offense and a good defense.
Thank you very much. And just one follow-up question. The guidance for future production is a little bit reduced from where we were previously, not that significantly. Are there any fears at the moment that reaching that sort of doubling of production by 2018 is now becoming a bit of a stretch target?
Edward, I don't think that's changed at all. That's some issues we're dealing with in the U.S. and at Inkai. And as we said, we're recovering some of those pounds by better production at MacArthur Key. So, I don't think we're going to be absolutely bang on every time, but, the slight reduction of 1% isn't causing us any concern.
Super. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Brenda Bell with the Globe and Mail. Please go ahead.
Hi, I was wondering if you could give some more details on the decision-making process you're going through right now related to your next move for Hathor. The expectation is you need to top Rio's bid, maybe to meet growth objectives. I wonder if you can comment on that. And also, what are the chances that you might team up with Rio for Hathor? Is that one of the options on the table?
Yeah, thanks, Brenda. We're really not in a position to really discuss our actions, either planned or otherwise. All I can say is that our bid was expiring. Our initial bid was expiring on October 31st, and we have extended that to November 14th, so you'll hear from us in due course.
Thank you. Our next question is from Chris Donville with Bloomberg News. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I just wondered if you could clarify on the volumes, the delivery that was deferred into the fourth quarter. Was that for uranium? What was the reason for the deferral?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. I'm going to ask Ken Seitz to answer that.
Yep, absolutely. It was a delivery that a uranium delivery that we deferred in from earlier this year into the fourth quarter. We are at the moment delivering material into China, and through some discussions with our Chinese customer just elected to move that delivery into the fourth quarter. So, and certainly we do this all the time, moving material around, really working with our customers to meet their delivery needs. So nothing unusual there.
Okay. And how much was the volume?
I guess the total deferred volume with that particular customer was about 1.5 million pounds.
And does the 1.5 million represent the entire deferral, or the entire volumes that were deferred?
No, we have done one other as well. I think total deferrals into the quarter would be about 2.5 million.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1 at this time. The next question is from Ben Eliash with Stern Agee. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. Ben Elias, Stern Agee.
Hi, Ben.
Hi. You know, just a question. You guys adjusted your production, uranium production, very slightly. Bigger adjustment in fuel services, and you commented about UF6 conversion. When I look at the supply chain out there, you know, USEC's talking about maybe even shutting down GDP next year because utility demand is so weak and the pricing environment isn't very good. Areva has taken, I think, $300 million in deferrals or cancellations for uranium. You know, how are we to... Can you tell us about some of the conversations you're having with your utility customers? You said you have about 300 million pounds in long-term contracts. You know, how do we get a high level of confidence right now, given the skepticism, given the uncertainty?
Then I'd say if you separate the two pieces, uranium, you know, our uranium portfolio is strong. We're quite happy with it. As you say, we have about 300 million pounds under contract right now that we plan to deliver to on pricing formulas that you can probably see in our table. So we're quite strong in that position. The conversion market, at least in the short term, is soft, and I think you've seen that from other producers. And we you know, we had some inventory, and so that's the reason behind our slight reduction in production of UF6 conversion this year.
Okay, you know, just to follow up, you did mention that pricing table. I noticed some of the prices, or you know, moved to the left. Anything to read into that?
On the pricing table, first, I should say that you will have seen that we had some issues with that in the last quarter, and so we've rectified those and certainly put in place procedures and people to ensure that we don't make that mistake again. And so. We've got that corrected. I think there are some small movements on the margins. Ken, do you have anything to add on that pricing table?
No, nothing I think noteworthy there. As you say, just some very small movements. So no, I think it accurately reflects what our portfolio will perform under those various prices.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Edward Sterk with BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi there. I just wanted to ask a follow-up question, and I apologize because I dialed in a tiny bit late and I only caught the end of this, so you have actually already mentioned it. There was a statement at the beginning of the call on China's targets for installed nuclear capacity by 2020. Could you just repeat that for me and also give an indication of the source for that as well, please?
Yeah, Edward, I was over there for the WNA conference about 2 weeks ago, and so this was a presentation by... I don't remember exactly the fellow's name that said, you know, the Chinese nuclear program is still going very strong. They have, I think, 14 units in operation, another 26 or 27 under construction that they plan to have in production by 2015, which is breathtaking for us on the growth side. It's that next chunk that we're looking at, 2015 to 2020, and we think now that they'll build another 20 units in that period, which would get them somewhere between 60 and 70 gigawatt electric installed capacity. If you remember some months ago, there were prognostications that would be way higher than that, 80, 90, we even saw triple digits. So I think 60 to 70 are the latest numbers we've seen and still represents strong growth in China.
And just to be specific, are these your forecasts based upon what you can see out there, or are they official sort of government sort of targets?
Those would be our forecasts based on all of the information we've collected over the past weeks and months.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from John Licata with Blue Phoenix, Inc. Please go ahead.
Hey, Tim. Thank you very much for your candid view of Cameco going forward. A two-part question. I'm just curious if Cameco believes that the HEU agreement between the United States and Russia goes astray in 2013, is there growing confidence within Cameco that you can offset some of the supply gap, especially coming from Cigar Lake? And if so, does that make you think possibly looking into a stock repurchase program similar to what was in place in 2007 makes a lot of sense now with the equity down 50%.
John, I think I heard two different pronged questions there. One was HEU coming off in 2013, which we absolutely believe will happen, and whether we can make up that production, which we think we can over time. Yeah, I was just thinking this morning that HEU, a total agreement, when it does come off, that would equal the production, I think, from MacArthur, Rabbit, Smith Ranch, and Crow Butte all put together. That would be about the equivalent. I think it's 24 million pounds of production. And so, yeah, that will have to be made up by the market somewhere. We have, of course, our projects coming on, Cigar Lake coming on in the period and ramping up, so we believe our sales will ramp up with the new production. Your other question was, I believe, related to a possible share buyback. Not in our plans at the moment. We plan to continue to grow the company, grow the production, and so we're not planning on that right now.
Okay, fair enough. And a quick follow-up on a more macro level. President Obama has stated that by 2015, he has expectations of the electric vehicle market to reach 1 million vehicles here in the United States. And I was curious to see if Cameco is starting to explore some non-traditional alliances with either charging station companies or utility companies, because obviously the need for baseload power can quickly start to make a very interesting conversation over the next couple of years.
An interesting question, John, because over the years we have watched that quite closely, the electric vehicle market, just to see what effect it would have on the electricity market and the need for more safe, clean, secure nuclear energy. And so we're not directly involved in that, and quite frankly, I hope he's right. I hope that's the way the market goes. I don't know where the technology is at now, but if it does, certainly nuclear could play a big role in supplying the electricity to fuel those cars.
Well, great. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you. The next question is from Matthew Hill with MiningWeekly.com. Please go ahead.
Morning, everyone. I just got a quick question regarding India and a potential supply deal between Cameco and that country. I know previously the company said that you were hoping to ink some sort of pact. But then obviously the talks between the two governments got interrupted by the federal election here. What's the situation then? When are you hoping to have something done by?
Well, Matthew, thanks for the question. We do still see India as a strong growth country for nuclear. They have aggressive nuclear growth plans. And having seen that, we decided to make some moves and open a very small representative office in Hyderabad and have a very solid gentleman in charge of that office. That said, going has been a bit slow, I would say, for one of the reasons being the nuclear cooperation agreement between Canada and India is not yet finalized. We continue to push both sides to get that done. There's some administrative arrangements that still have to be worked out. So we're there, we're present. I think some of us will be heading over there in the not-too-distant future to again press the case, and we continue to press the NCA case with the federal government of Canada.
Okay, great. Do you have any sort of indication as to when the cooperation agreement might be finalized by?
Well, we have a few of them in the hopper, as we've stated before. The Chinese one for us is very important, and there's an agreement in place, actually. It just needs an amendment, and so that's probably the one we've been pushing the hardest, and then, of course, the Indian one is not far behind. I wish I could tell you when they will be completed. We hope it's not too far in the future. We've been spending a lot of time encouraging, as I say, both the governments to get them done because it's very important for our company. And so, and we get good indications that the goodwill is there, but we just need the final paper sign.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you. The next question is from Ben Eliash with Stern AG. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the second go around. Just a modeling question. What's the tax rate assumption for the year?
I'll ask Grant to Isaac to give us that.
Yeah, so our outlook table is still calling for a recovery in our consolidated tax position, 0 to 5%.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
Thank you. The next question is from Greg Barnes with TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Ken, what are your conversations like with utilities right now? What are they thinking? Where are their heads at? Is there still a chill? What do they want to do?
Yeah, it's an excellent question, Greg. We're talking to all of our customers at the moment, as you can imagine. And I would say that our traditional, you know, Western utility customers continue to be well covered. You know, we've said that we're heavily committed through 2016, and similarly, they're well covered through that period. And so they, purchasing is still a bit discretionary among that group. And so with the uncertainty in price in the market, they are able to sit out and a little and watch how this is going to unfold. So those conversations with Western utilities are going along those lines. With respect to other parts of the world, places like India and China, certainly Japan and Germany, looking at their programs, and especially Japan and Germany, obviously having deferral discussions with those utilities, given that their needs are down. But even in places like China and India, where I think, as Tim said in his opening remarks, the new build has been pushed out a bit, and so those customers, while they'll be back in the market, we haven't seen them heavily in the market this year, as they just are reevaluating their overall needs given their inventory position. So I would say overall the mood is among our utility customers is still optimistic and positive, and I think becoming more positive all the time. And I think we'll see in 2012 some additional contracting, which will, I think help to reinforce that we're still in a growing business here.
What about the issue of non-strategic inventories from places like Germany and Japan? Do you have any sense of how big they are? Or what's going to happen to them?
Yeah, we do have a sense of how big they are, and just the number of units in Japan and Germany. And we've always said that those utility customers will hold 1 or 2 years worth of inventory. And the situations in Japan and Germany are a little bit different, because in Japan we're still of the view that those units will be back, or at least the majority of them. In Germany, there's a planned phase out there. In terms of what's happening to those inventories, we've talked about it a little bit in our disclosure. So far, it appears as though the utilities are having conversations with producers about quite simply deferring volumes, because they do have units that will continue to run. And so those volumes are typically tacked on to the end of the contract. The thinking there is uranium prices suffered a little bit under the events in Japan, and those responsible utilities don't want to damage the price further.
Okay, good. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you. The next question is from Orest Wowkada with Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for taking my question. Just following up a little bit more on Greg's question, how much visibility do you have at this point in terms of 2012 uranium deliveries? Like, should we be anticipating that deliveries will be lower than they were this year, in the 31 to 33 million pound range?
I think we would plan to be in the same range as we are this year for 2012.
And at what point, in terms of customers being able to defer material, say, from 2012 to future periods, how much time do they have to sort of make those decisions, or do they really have until the end of next year?
Well, those are really mutual decisions to be made, and, we treat them case by case, and depending on which customer and what the circumstances are, we do or don't do that. I think it's got to be by mutual agreement. And so we said, I think off the hop with some of our long-term Japanese customers that we've been dealing with for 20, 30 years, that if they came to us and had some requests for deferrals, we would look really seriously at those. We've done that, but other than that, we plan to deliver on our contract portfolio.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. This will conclude the questions from the telephone lines. I would like to turn the meeting back over to Mr. Tim Gitzel for his closing remarks.
Well, thank you, operator, and thank you to everyone who joined us on the call today. Closing, I'd just add that one of our biggest strengths right now is our reliable and predictable cash flow, which is underpinned by our strong contract portfolio. We are heavily committed through 2016 with a contract mix that provides an attractive realized price, whether the market rises or continues to soften. That fact, combined with our excellent operational performance, is why we can and will continue to benefit all of our stakeholders. So again, today I say thank you for joining us, and have a great day, everyone. Thank you.